Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, it's Thomas Partey. Welcome to this edition of Arsenal Audio Matchday Program.
Arsenal versus FC Porto, Tuesday, March the 12th, 2024. Kickoff, 8 p.m. The contents. Captain's notes. Around Arsenal. Player feature, Thomas Partey. Women. Sustainability. Community voice. My fave shirt. Academy Young Gun, Taylor Foran, Around the Academy, Visitors, FC Porto, Match Action, FC Porto vs Arsenal, Match Action, Arsenal vs Brentford, and Teams.
Martin Odegaard, Captain's Notes. Ever since the final whistle went on Saturday, we've been preparing ourselves for tonight's game. It was great to keep our momentum going with our win over Brentford at the weekend, and of course getting a late goal always gives you a little extra edge as well. We worked so hard throughout the game to score the winner, and I think we absolutely deserved it when it came. We can take a lot of good things from that game into tonight's match. We had to deal with a lot of difficult situations, so it was good practice for tonight. We had to control our emotions throughout the game, and we did that brilliantly. The win took us top of the table as well, which is great for confidence, and we want to build on that good feeling we have at the moment. We have a great bond here as a team, which I've spoken about many times, because the spirit here around the whole club is just unbelievable. It's the best I've ever seen in my life as part of a team. We have something special for sure. And that's showing on the pitch too, how much we enjoy playing together. You see more and more how we understand each other on the pitch, how we move in relation to each other, and that's so important. We're a better team than last season, and we've got more experience together. What we learned from last year, we've been using in a good way going into this season. It's up to us to show that now in the remaining couple of months of the season. We're on a great run in the league, 8 wins in a row. Which is why it's difficult to explain why our performance away to Porto in the first leg was so different to what we've been doing in the league lately. The main difference was our intention when we had the ball. We didn't threaten enough. We didn't play forward enough. We were trying to play around them rather than through them. That's one of the things we've done so well lately in the Premier League, playing the ball between the lines, getting our players in dangerous positions. We've been really good in our movement, working for each other to open the spaces, but we weren't able to do that in Porto. I don't know what that was, but that's football sometimes, and you also have to give credit to Porto too. To be fair, they did well to stop us too. They took the speed out of the game, made it tough for us to play, but that's something you have to deal with, especially in European football. We have to be able to win in any context. That's something we've spoken about before, and it's something we'll have to improve if we want to go all the way in Europe. We know we didn't play well in Portugal though, and we can do so much better. That's what we want to put right tonight in the second leg. We have all the motivation we need right here, to come back here at the Emirates and make it right. It's only half time. We learnt a lot from that first leg. Now it's down to us to turn it around. Coming back here, in front of you all, we have the belief we will turn it around, because I know you'll create another brilliant atmosphere inside the stadium. Hopefully it will be a good game. We can impose ourselves on the situation and then have enough quality to get the win. It's been a long time since we've had a Champions League knockout game here at Emirates Stadium. But to be honest, I don't think that changes anything in our mindset or approach, knowing that we're at the knockout stages now. We go into every game wanting to win anyway, and that's the same tonight, of course, because we know nothing else is good enough. Maybe it can be a factor more in the first leg, thinking that there is another game and you need to be smart, weighing up the risk and reward part of it. But in the second leg, it's just about the result. Like we always do at the Emirates, we go out there for the win, so nothing's changed for us. We know what we need to do. We know we're good enough to deliver that. So now the rest is just down to us on the pitch to make sure we do it. We can do that with your help as well, of course, by making Emirates Stadium loud and passionate as you always do. This is our home. Let's continue to make it a difficult place for teams to come. We can do that all together.
Around Arsenal. Congratulations, Mikel. Mikel Arteta has been named the Premier League Manager of the Month for February. The boss has scooped the award after guiding us to 4 wins from 4 and scoring 18 goals in the process, edging out Pep Guardiola and Erik ten Hag to take the honour, and celebrated collecting the prize with his coaching staff, Iñaki Cano, Carlos Cuesta, Albert Stuvenberg, Nicolas Javert and Miguel Molina. Mikel was the only boss in the division to record a 100% record in February, which began with the superb 3-1 win against table-topping Liverpool that pulled us back into title contention. And the momentum from that saw us thrash West Ham United 6-0 away. Burnley were then beaten 5-0 away from home, before we rounded off the month with a 4-1 success against Newcastle United at Emirates Stadium to move within touching distance of Liverpool and Manchester City at the top of the league. It is the first award for Mikel this season, having been nominated 5 times, and adds to his growing collection of divisional monthly accolades. He has now been named Premier League Manager of the Month on 7 occasions, since taking charge of us in December 2019, meaning only 7 managers in the competition's history have won more. One of those is Arsene Wenger, and when you combine his 15 triumphs with Mikel's, it means that only Manchester United and Liverpool have won more often than ourselves. Tonight's tie. A reminder that the away goals rule no longer applies in the UEFA Champions League. If the aggregate scores are tied after 90 minutes tonight, 30 minutes of extra time will be played, followed by a penalty shootout if the sides still can't be separated. The draw for the quarterfinals of the competition takes place in Nyon, Switzerland, this Friday, March the 15th, at 11 a.m, with no seedings. Teams from the same country or group can be drawn against each other. The draws for the semi-final and final will also be made this Friday. The two-legged quarterfinals will take place on Tuesday and Wednesday, April the 9th and 10th, and Tuesday and Wednesday, April the 16th and 17th. Declan wins Goal of the Month. For the second time this season, Declan Rice has picked up our Emirates Goal of the Month award, this time for his stunning strike against West Ham United. Our midfielder received more than 50% of the votes to clinch February's prize, following on from September's award, which he won courtesy of his dramatic late winner against Man United. In a bumper month for Gunners' netbusters, Alessia Russo came second for her diving header against the Hammers, while Chloe Lacasse's pinpoint finish against London City Lionesses finished third. However, Rice's 25-yard rocket dominated the vote, with his strike also nominated for the Premier League's monthly accolade. His superb header on Saturday against Brentford took him up to 6 goals for us in the Premier League, which marks his best ever haul in the top flight. After his goal against Sheffield United, Declan scored in back-to-back games in the Premier League for the first time. Ref Watch. Tonight's referee is Clément Turpin from Lyon in France. The 41-year-old is refereeing his fifth Arsenal match this evening. Nearly 10 years ago, he was the man in the middle for an action-packed 3-3 draw against Anderlecht at Emirates on November 4, 2014. A game in which Mikel Arteta scored his final goal for us. In season 2017-18, he was in charge of our excellent 2-0 win against AC Milan in the San Siro in the Europa League round of 16 and the 1-1 draw against Atletico Madrid at Emirates in the first leg of the semi-final. The following season, Clément was in charge of our 3-1 semi-final first leg win against Valencia at Emirates Stadium. Congratulations, under-15s! Our academy team won the Premier League Under-15 International Tournament at the weekend, a superb achievement for our young gunners. The group stage started with a 2-2 draw with Everton, followed by wins over Sporting Lisbon and West Brom, 2-0 and 3-0 respectively. Skipper Max Dalman scored the only goal of the semi-final against PSV Eindhoven, and a brace from Marley Frohawk ensured a 2-2 draw with Aston Villa in the final, before Dalman and Frohawk scored in the penalty shootout, alongside Brando Bailey-Joseph, Bowen Phillips and Sorab Sampang to win 5-4. Congratulations to Bailey-Joseph, whose 7 assists and 1 goal earned him the Player of the Tournament award. Afterwards, under-15 head coach Josh Smith was delighted. "It's a fantastic achievement," he said. "We are incredibly proud of the hard work the players and staff put in throughout the season. The players showcased their style as individuals within a team and showed their togetherness and passion throughout the tournament." Speeding to 70. Following our 2 goals against Brentford, it's now 70 goals after 28 league games for the Gunners, the earliest into a league campaign we've reached 70 goals since 1963-64, when we got to 70 after 27 games. All-time goals, 10,000 goals. Overall record, 1,2,811. Lost, 1,646. Drew, 1,382. 4. 10,000. Against, 7,061. Goals per competition. Division 1 Premier League, 7,193 goals, 4,313 games. Goals per game, 1.67. Division 2, 824 goals, 428 games. Goals per game, 1.93. FA Cup, 888 goals, 486 games. Goals per game, 1.82. League Cup, 448 goals, 243 games. Goals per game, 1.84. European Cup, Champions League, 348 goals, 208 games. Goals per game, 1.67. UEFA Cup, Europa League, 165 goals, 84 games. Goals per game, 1.95. Cup Winners' Cup, 48 goals, 27 games. Goals per game, 1.78. Fairs Cup, 46 goals, 24 games. Goals per game, 1.92. Community Shield, 40 goals, 24 games. Goals per game, 1.67. The club brought up a significant milestone in our thumping win over Sheffield United. Ben White's second-half strike was the 10,000th goal our men's first team have scored in all competitions in our history. The tally dates right back to our first match in senior nationwide football, an FA Cup qualifier in 1889, and every goal we have scored since then in the Football League, FA Cup, League Cup, Community Shield, and European competition has counted, and the tally now reaches five figures. It took us 5,839 matches to get there at a rate of 1.71 per game, and the 10,000 goals were scored by 535 different players, not including own goals. Leading the way with 228 is Thierry Henry. He is one of 19 players to score at least 100. Our goal scorers have netted an average of 18.3 goals each. 85 players scored just once, while 367 of our 902 players represented the first team without ever scoring. The overwhelming majority of the goals have come in league football, with 824 in the second tier and 7,193 in the top flight. 2,173 have come in the Premier League. 607 of the goals have been scored in various European competition, including 327 in the Champions League and 888 in the FA Cup, including qualifying games. The League Cup, which we first entered in 1966, has seen us score 448 times, with the remaining 40 goals coming from our 24 charity Community Shield matches. Our 10,000 goals have been scored against 219 different teams over the past 135 years, with Everton our most frequent victims, with 367 goals conceded. We went into this season still 87 goals away from the big landmark, but thanks to our highest scoring rate for more than 70 years, Mikel Arteta's side raced to the figure by the beginning of March. "I wasn't really sure it had gone in," White said after scoring the momentous goal. "I shot, didn't look where I was shooting, and did a little spin, so I didn't actually see the ball go in, but then obviously I heard the crowd. I don't score many, so it's really nice to get the 10,000th. For more on this historic milestone, refer to our extensive feature on arsenal.com. Ticket news. Home tickets. Arsenal v Chelsea. Premier League. Date TBC. This match, scheduled for Saturday, March the 16th, has been postponed due to Chelsea's FA Cup participation. Details of a new date for this fixture will be announced in due course. Arsenal v Luton Town, Premier League, Wednesday, April the 3rd, kick-off, 7:30 p.m. The ballots for this match are now closed. Arsenal v Leicester City, Women's Super League, Sunday, April the 21st, kick-off, 2 p.m. Tickets for this match are on general sale. Please note, the date and time of this fixture are subject to change due to TV broadcast selections. Away tickets. Manchester City v Arsenal, Etihad Stadium, Premier League, Sunday, March the 31st, 2024. Kick-off, 4:30 p.m. Tickets for this match sold out to Gold, Platinum and Travel Club members with 20-plus away points. Brighton and Hove Albion v Arsenal, Amex Stadium, Premier League, Saturday, April the 6th, 2024, kick-off, 5:30 p.m. Tickets for this match sold out to Gold, Platinum and Travel Club members with 20-plus away points. Notice board. A very happy 80th birthday to Barbara Lambert, who is the daughter of our legendary player Cliff Baston. Love from all your family, friends and Arsenal Football Club. Wishing a very happy 38th birthday to top gunner Anthony Cox from Manny, Trish, Chris, Jess, Lee and Louise. Happy 50th and 18th birthday to father and son Gareth Houston and Dare Houston, both season ticket holders from Ireland. COYG. On the 12th of March, I will have been a Gooner for 79 years. Jack Markovic. Kieran Patton. Big 40th. Happy birthday, Matilda Ray Hibble. Hashtag future Arsenal. Hashtag one. Welcome back to the Emirates, Luca and Leo Ventris, for your first Champions League match. Come on, you Gunners. Happy birthday, Nathan. Have a great day with a result to match. Lots of love, Curtis, Franklin and Theo. Happy 10th birthday, Ruben Gunner Farr. Hope you have an amazing day. You are our number one. Love from us all. Happy 11th birthday, Ollie Gore. Love from Mum, Dad and Oscar. Happy birthday, Paul. Hope you're having a fun and fabulous day. Love from Kim and Woofs and Licks. Penny. Massive happy birthday to Ellis James. From Monta, Honey and Ollie. COYG. Happy 11th birthday, Cole Chancer. Enjoy the match with lots of love, Dad, Dennis, Mum, Chloe, and your sister, Kira. Happy birthday, Armando de Almeida. Happy 70th birthday, Lee, lifetime Arsenal supporter and best husband, dad, pa, and friend there is. We all love you lots. Happy 50th birthday to Douglas Millen, who celebrated his birthday last month in style in New York. From Pete. Welcome Susie and Charlie Engerbretson to your first match at Emirates. And a happy 12th birthday to Charlie. Love Mum and Dad. Special thanks to Coach Mulenga and Ed Hope Academy for all the inspiration and training. Blessed to work with you. Susie and Charlie. Happy 40th birthday, Carl. Love Adam, Carla, Leo and Flora. Happy 18th birthday, Millie Wick. Love from Mum, Dad, Phoebe and Lottie. New little Guna born February the 10th, Nellie Bo Bozier. Welcome to the world, Harrison Stretch. Congratulations to Sam, Leah and big sisters Rosie and Piper. Martin and son Rory, over for their first game ever. Two lifelong Gunners. Arsenal remembers. Harry Wren. 11th of June 2000 to 17th of January 2024. Loved Arsenal. Loved football. Loved life. We will love and miss you forever, Harry. The world is emptier without you. Forever Red, Forever 23. Ahan Karamez, season ticket holder for over 40 years, a truly wonderful friend who loved the Arsenal, passed away recently, aged 62, forever in our hearts. Terry Doyle, a true Gooner, son, brother, dad, uncle and husband. Loved so much and always in our hearts. Gareth Smith, a true Gooner, taken far too soon. Baby Jackson, born on November the 4th, 2023, gained his angel wings in the arms of his parents, Kim and Dan, on February the 9th, 2024. He will be missed by Mummy, Daddy and big sister Lottie. Michael Brain. In loving memory of Michael, who passed away on Friday, February the 16th, 2024. Born on August the 7th, 1963, he was a lifelong Arsenal superfan who enjoyed many fantastic memories at Highbury and the Emirates. Michael forever, whatever the weather. God bless you, Michael. Rest in peace, brother. Paul Hoodie, forever in our hearts, love always, Kim, Wayne, Nina, Noemi, Oscar and Sophia, RIP. Andrew Strong, aged 43, loyal Arsenal supporter, father of three wonderful young Gooners, beloved husband, friend and champion of human rights. Died December the 11th in The Hague. Your dedication, compassion, imagination, and laughter lifted us all. You are loved and missed.
Together, Thomas Partey. We speak to our first team players about what togetherness and team spirit means to them. From Ghana to the Gunners, our midfielder on how he's adapted to different team environments throughout his career. Thomas Partey's footballing journey has taken him from the lower leagues of Ghanaian football to the upper echelons of the Premier League, via 8 years in the Spanish capital with La Liga giants Atletico Madrid. He's had to be adaptable and determined throughout that time, dealing with plenty of different challenges along the way, but his love of the sport has always been his main motivating factor. His combative, resolute approach on the pitch has been matched by his attitude off it since his first steps into football back in his hometown of Udumasi Krobu in eastern Ghana. He gradually worked his way up through the levels in Ghanaian football before getting his big move to Europe at the age of 18. As he explains, that was a huge culture shock to what he had known growing up. But before he gets to that, our midfielder explains what life was like for him during his early days in the sport. "My first team was called Krobo Youth," he begins. "This was when I was about 9 years old. I played there until I was 12 and then moved to a team in the suburbs of Accra called Ashaman Revolution FC. I played for them until I was 18, which is when I moved to Spain. But that was the club I grew up with as a footballer. We had a good, young, talented team at the time, and I still have a few mates from that time who are now playing elsewhere in Europe. They are not at the very top now, but they are still playing and I still talk with them a lot. For me, I grew up with my father playing football," he continues, "so I always had football around the home when I was young. It was the same at school with my friends there. Everywhere we went, I just wanted to play football. Then, when I joined my first side at the age of 9, it was my life from then on. Every day, I was playing football. We didn't have any other sports we did, always football." So, what sort of player was the young Thomas Partey? Were there signs of what was to come from him during those formative years? Well, when I first started, I was one of the youngest in the team. Most of the guys were older than me, but I was always competitive and wanted to compete with the senior players. I think that's why they like me. Through my competitiveness, I became one of the main figures that they all looked up to. Also, I like to look up to the senior players and learn what I could from them, and that's how I developed at that age. I was always a team player. I always wanted to be involved with the rest of the players. At some points, I was the captain as well, I think at under-8s, under-12s and under-14s. I loved that. It was great. We had a good team, lots of talented players, and in that area, we were a strong side who won most of our games. We played a lot of games against the academy sides in Ghana, and I loved those games especially. I was a midfielder then too," he continues, "but sometimes as an attacking midfielder. I used to rotate my role, but really I just love playing anywhere. Every day when I got home from school, I would play. Usually it was about 3 or 4 games a day. I would play for the under-12s, then go and play for the under-14s or 16s. Then I would play with the senior and professional players. I've got great memories of those days." He can recall one of his main highlights from that time very clearly, a moment when he stepped up and scored a title-clinching goal. "I remember when we won the league when I was with the under-14s. We played a big game to decide the title against a very tough opponent. It was 0-0 and we won a free kick near the corner on the right. I just had to put the free kick into the box, but I went for a half-cross, half-shot, and it went straight into the top angle of the goal. We won the game 1-0 and won the league against a very good team. We were a good team too, though. It was like a real derby, and this was the only goal of the game. It was always fun in those games, but that one was special." It's little wonder then that Thomas was soon starting to get noticed further afield. It was while he was playing in the second division of the Ghana League that he attracted the interest of reigning Europa League champions Atletico Madrid during the early days of management under Diego Simeone. His passage to the Spanish capital, though, was far from straightforward, as he explains. A few weeks after I turned 18, I moved to Spain. I couldn't travel until I was 18 because I didn't have a passport growing up. I was in the second division in Ghana, and that season we got promoted to the top division, and that was when I got my move to Spain. In my mind, I always wanted to play in Europe, so I knew that I had to go. It felt like magic for me. I had no idea where in Europe I would go, Spain or somewhere else, but it was always in my mind to move outside Ghana, and then I got my chance. So when my agent said I had the chance to go to Spain, I said, "Okay, I'm going. I'm leaving everything behind," even though we had just got promoted. Everyone wanted to play in the Premier League in Ghana. That was what we had worked so hard for, but it was also my dream to move abroad. I had watched a lot of games on TV, from the Premier League, La Liga, all the top clubs. So that was always my plan. Then, when I got the chance, I didn't know if it would work, but I put all my trust in them, and in the end, it went well. Atletico Madrid wanted to sign me, but first of all, I had to go to Leganes, because Atletico couldn't sign me directly, as I didn't have a contract in Ghana. So that was short term, as a big favour from them to process my papers, then I could go to Atletico on a trial loan. That went very well, and then they signed me. So it was a dream move, but still it wasn't without its challenges. The teenage Thomas had to move continents, leaving home for the very first time without any of his family to support him. Emotionally, it was difficult to leave home for the first time, the 30-year-old confirms. But in my heart, I've always just wanted to play football, so I would make it work. I put my mind just on doing well, trying to get selected for Atletico, because it's a big team. I remember when I arrived, they had players like Falcao and Diego Costa, who I'd watched on TV. That was the motivation for me. I knew it was a big chance for me at a big team, so I put everything else behind me. I miss my family a lot, but I was able to control my mind, to focus on staying at Atletico and doing well. We had a few other African players at the time, or French African, who were my friends, but to be honest, I was really close with most of the players. I learnt a bit of English and could interact with my teammates. So, how different was life in the dressing room compared to what he had been used to in Ghana? What were the main differences he had to adapt to? "Well, the first difference is that in Africa we don't have a dressing room," he says, smiling. "We just use the pitches. It's not the same as Europe. You go straight to the game, you get changed and you play the game. It's not like you live every day with your teammates in the dressing room. There you just take your boots and go straight to the pitch. So moving to Europe was a big difference, but I'm somebody who gets used to every situation. I was quick to go along with what was happening. When we had a joke, I could join in. The problem is, I didn't understand most of the jokes at the beginning. I didn't know why something was funny, but I always wanted to join in. I remember they used to joke with me about my hair or how strong I am, stuff like this. I learnt a lot from them, and I always enjoyed that team spirit." He soon settled in, and Thomas's time in Spain would prove to be a huge success. After loan spells with Mallorca and Almeria, he returned to Atletico to become a mainstay of their midfield. He played in the 2016 Champions League final against Real Madrid, then won the Europa League and UEFA Super Cup in 2018. He had made just under 200 appearances for Atletico before signing for us in 2020, one of Mikel Arteta's first major signings, a few months after we'd won the FA Cup. "Coming here was a big change also," he reflects, "because I had come from somewhere where I arrived as a youth player, so there was not that expectation on me at Atletico, and not the same responsibility. When I came to Arsenal, everybody saw the transfer fee, and I was coming to a club that had a lot of eyes on it. Everybody knows about Arsenal, the profile, and I had arrived as one of the stars, there to help the team to grow. So it was a big change, and the style of play is different too. All I could do was stay positive, get used to it, and learn to deal with the new situation where everybody expects you to be at your very top level every single day. It was a good learning experience for me. One of the reasons I joined, though, was for that challenge.
I know the Premier League is very tough, but I wanted to feel that challenge, to test myself and feel capable of doing it. My agent supported me a lot, and my parents, and also everybody at the club was great for me. You have to stay positive, learn from everything that happens, and just control the things that you can. Thomas soon proved his worth to the team, winning back-to-back Player of the Month awards for us at the end of 2021-22 and dominating games last season before injury curtailed his progress. Another injury sustained in October has meant that this season has also been hugely frustrating for the two-time Ghana Player of the Year. But he made a welcome return to action last week against Sheffield United and is now only looking forward. Last year, we did so well and came very close to what we wanted to achieve, he said. This year, we have lots of big players and I know we are capable of doing big things. It's been tough for me, being injured for a long time, but now I am ready to give everything I can to the team. Anything I can add to our level, I will do. I worked hard during my rehab to be able to come back to the level I need to be at. Now I want to get back with the team.
Women. Arsenal Inter Conti Cup Final. We booked our place in the Continental Cup Final with a dominant 4-0 win over Aston Villa at Meadow Park last Wednesday, with Stina Backstenius blasting a first-half hat-trick. Jonas Eidvall shuffled his pack following the 1-0 win over Tottenham Hotspur the previous Sunday, with Leah Williamson returning to captain the side. Kyra Cooney-Cross and Frieda Marnham came into midfield and Blackstenius started up front, which meant Alessia Russo shifted to the left with Caitlin Ford on the bench. The Gunners almost went ahead inside the opening minute, but Russo couldn't quite direct a cross from Blackstenius on target. We didn't have to wait long for the opener, though, when Marnham split the Villa defence wide open on 9 minutes, and Blackstenius rifled an unstoppable first-time finish past Anna Leet. Within 2 minutes, we had doubled the lead, and it was Blackstenius again, hitting the roof of the net after Russo bundled a cross from the right back towards the penalty spot. Again, we didn't have to wait long for another opportunity, and it resulted in another goal. Katie McCabe driving forward and squaring for Marnham to curl home a trademark long-range effort. Moments later, we went close to a fourth when the visitors hacked Steph Catley's free kick off the line, and even closer when McCabe rattled the crossbar with a free kick of her own. But we had to wait until the 39th minute for another goal, and it was Blackstenius who completed her hat-trick when she headed home from close range after Lotta Vuben-Moy had hooked Beth Mead's free kick back across goal. Marnham had a goal ruled out for offside, following an intricate team move after the restart. Catley fired over from distance and Blackstenius had a shot deflected over as we continued to dominate, and on the hour mark, Mead curled an effort just wide. Villa improved without offering too much of a threat as the pace of the game wound down and we spurned some more chances, with sub Victoria Pelova seeing a shot well blocked and then firing over. But the job had been done in the first half. We will now face Chelsea, who beat Manchester City 1-0 in their semi-final last Thursday, in a repeat of last year's final, which we won 3-1 at Selhurst Park. This season's final will take place at Molineux on Sunday, March the 31st. Well done to our matchday teams. As you may have been aware of in the Brentford programme, we made more history on March the 3rd, when all female teams took responsibility for preparing the Emirates Stadium pitch and overseeing our matchday IT operations. The grounds team, overseen by Arsenal groundsperson Tara Sandford, ensured the playing surface was pristine, while the IT team, led by Jocelyn Davis, made sure matchday went off without a hitch. We also had an all-female police team, with overall responsibility for safety on site, led by Arsenal Event Safety and Operations Officer Melissa Wilson. Well done to all. Making history again. It was another memorable occasion at Emirates Stadium on March the 3rd, as we played in front of a 60,050 sell-out crowd for a second successive home game and set some more landmarks along the way. Incredibly, in a historic day for women's football in this country, the North London Derby boasted the highest attendance of the day across England in all forms of the game, including the Manchester Derby at the Etihad Stadium in the Premier League later on Sunday afternoon. We also had the second highest attendance in England across the whole weekend. The crowd on Sunday also means we now account for the six biggest attendances in WSL history, four of which have come this season. The other five are 61,160 against Manchester United in February 2024, 59,042 versus Chelsea, December 2023, 54,115 against Liverpool, October 2023, 47,367 versus Tottenham Hotspur, October 2022, and 46,881 against Chelsea, January 2023. The next highest attendance is the 44,259 who watched the Manchester Derby at Old Trafford in December. We have one more opportunity to add to that list this season, of course, when we host Leicester City at the Emirates on April the 21st. Tickets are on sale now, and we hope we'll see you there as the WSL season nears its conclusion. Walk in her name. As in 2023, our supporters have organised a 100-kilometre walk to take place throughout March to raise money for ovarian cancer action in honour of Beth Mead's mum, June, who passed away from the disease in January 2023. Last year, this amazing event raised nearly £12,000, so we want to help them receive as many donations as possible in 2024. Walk in Her Name is now underway, and you can follow it by heading to AWSC_walkinhername on Instagram, where you will also find the Just Giving link to make a donation. Please help if you can. Emily Fox in Gold Cup Final. Our Canadian duo, Chloe Lacasse and Sabrina D'Angelo, faced off against Emily Fox's United States in the Gold Cup semi-final last Thursday, and it was Emily who progressed to the final after a dramatic 2-2 draw and 3-1 penalty shootout victory. By the time you listen to this, Emily will have faced Brazil, captained by ex-gunner Rafael Souza, in the final. We hope it went well. More milestones. Big congratulations to Frieda Marnham, who received a presentation from CEO Vinay Venkatcham before kickoff at the North London Derby on March the 3rd to mark her century of appearances in red and white. The 24-year-old Norwegian, who joined us from Linköping in July 2021, made her 100th appearance in the Continental Cup quarterfinal victory over London City Lionesses last month, having also recently won the Football Supporters Association Player of the Year Award for 2023. Well done, Frieda. You're only 98 away from the double century already. There was another landmark in the win over Aston Villa on Wednesday when Swiss midfielder Lea Valti made her 150th appearance for the club. Lea joined the Gunners from German giants Turbine Potsdam in July 2018 and has been a mainstay of our midfield ever since, helping us to win the WSL in 2018-19 and the Continental Cup last season. And finally, going back to last weekend's North London Derby, there was also a piece of history for Beth Mead, who became the first player to reach 40 assists in WSL history when she squared for Alessio Russo to fire home the winner. Even better than the number itself, however, is the fact that every one of those assists has been for just one club. Fixtures and results. 2 p.m. kickoff, unless stated. non-Emirates home matches at Boreham Wood FC. Wednesday, September the 6th, Linköping, UCL, 3-0. Sunday, September the 9th, Paris FC, UCL, 3-3. Lost on penalties. Sunday, October the 1st, Liverpool, WSL, 0-1. Friday, October the 6th, Manchester United, WSL, 2-2. Sunday, October the 15th, Aston Villa, WSL, 2-1. Sunday, October the 22nd, Bristol City, WSL, 2-1. Sunday, November the 5th, Manchester City, WSL, 2-1. Thursday, November the 9th, Bristol City, CC, 3-1. Sunday, November the 12th, Leicester City, WSL, 6-2. Sunday, November the 19th, Brighton and Hove Albion, WSL, 3-0. Thursday, November the 23rd, Southampton, CC, 2-1. Sunday, November the 26th, West Ham United, WSL, 3-0. Sunday, December the 10th, Chelsea, WSL, 4-1. Wednesday, December the 13th, Tottenham Hotspur, CC, 3-3, 1 on penalties. Saturday, December the 16th, Tottenham Hotspur, WSL, 0-1. Sunday, January the 14th, Watford, FAC, 5-1. Saturday, January the 20th, Everton, WSL, 2-1. Wednesday, January the 24th, Reading, CC, 6-0. Sunday, January the 28th, Liverpool, WSL, 2-0. Sunday, February the 3rd, West Ham United, WSL, 1-2. Sunday, February the 11th, Manchester City, FAC, 0-1. Wednesday, February the 14th, London City Lionesses, CCQF, 4-0. Saturday, February the 17th, Manchester United, WSL, 3-1. Sunday, March the 3rd, Tottenham Hotspur, WSL, 1-0. Wednesday, March the 6th, Aston Villa, CCSF, 4-0. Friday, March the 15th, Chelsea, 7 p.m, WSL. Sunday, March the 24th, Aston Villa, 6:45 p.m, WSL. Sunday, March the 31st, Chelsea at Molineux, CCF. Sunday, April the 21st, Leicester City, Emirates, WSL. Sunday, April the 28th, Everton, 1 p.m, WSL. Sunday, May the 5th, Manchester City, 1 p.m, WSL. Saturday, May the 18th, Brighton and Hove Albion, WSL. TBA, Bristol City, WSL.
Sustainability. Arsenal Acts. Emirates hosts launch. Collective action is the name of the game. As a club, league, nation, sport, we can achieve so much more than as individuals. On Wednesday, March 6th, Emirates Stadium hosted the launch of the UEFA Carbon Calculator. This represents a significant step towards helping clubs, venues and associations from right across the football pyramid to begin their own journey towards reducing their environmental impact. The event, expertly and enthusiastically hosted by Sky Sports' David Garrido, brought together over 200 people from across Europe. It was great to see so many of our friends and colleagues from Premier League clubs and the British Association for Sustainable Sport, BASIS. We at Arsenal have been involved in the development of this calculator right from the start, as we recognise the importance of collective action. Driven by UEFA, and involving input from right across Europe, we've been able to create a tool to measure the impact of clubs both big and small, and from that, identify areas where we can all improve. This is a start, and hopefully just the start of football collectively measuring and ultimately reducing emissions. with the FA, Premier League and UEFA all committing to driving sustainability in club football, it is clearly a great opportunity for us all, the football family across the world, to work together and make positive progress towards reducing our emissions. Tremendous. Last week, we were sent pictures of the first trees we planted back in December 2021. Just look at the size of them. We're talking sturdy 3 to 4 meter specimens. It's such an amazing sight for everyone involved in the project. Being on the equator, the conditions for growth in Bor are perfect, hence the rapid rise of our 32,000 strong forest. Though obviously the trees range from tiny saplings ready to go into the ground to these giants. Sunshine has followed the heavy rains, and there's nothing stopping our drought and insect-resistant neem heading higher and higher still, and we have already populated an area equivalent to over 17 Emirates football pitches. Make sure you scan the QR code on this page and get yourself involved. Be a part of the Arsenal Forest. For more on the project and to buy your own trees, for just £1 each, scan the QR code.
Community Voice, Arsenal Acts. Name, Waruni. Project, Women's Walking Football. Established 2022. Weekly participants, 25 to 30. Yearly participants, 550. Available to women ages 40 plus. Sessions, Wednesday, 10 to 11 a.m. at the Arsenal Hub. Sundays, 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. at Skinner's Academy. More info, email rhys.ratcliffe@rratcliffe@arsenal.co.uk. Our Women's Walking Football Project relaunched alongside our Men's Walking Football Project in July 2022. The focus of these sessions for women aged 40 plus is not just on football, but on staying fit through low-impact exercise, making friends and having fun. Since the relaunch, we have seen numbers rise to a similar level as our men's project, which has always been a long-term ambition for Arsenal in the community. Our women's sessions run twice a week, and the participants and coaches have created a welcoming environment for all ability levels. Waruni, age 43 and from Northwest London, tells us how the sessions have helped her. After the Lionesses' victory at the Euros, and becoming a fan of Arsenal women, I was googling women's walking football in North London and came across sessions run by Arsenal in the community. I had been searching for a team sport I could be involved in again and jumped at the chance to play at the Arsenal Hub. As a lifelong Gooner, I was excited to give it a go and see whether it would be a good fit. I was a bone cancer patient who had previously undergone chemotherapy and surgery to remove the primary tumour in my leg. Rehab had been quite long, but I was finally in a position to get involved in sports again. Unfortunately, I'm unable to play contact sports anymore, so walking football is a good alternative for me to try. To this day, stairs are my nemesis. I was very excited to take part in a football session again. I hadn't played properly since primary school. Football wasn't an option for girls in my high school, so I focused on other ball games. Everyone was so friendly and welcoming. I thoroughly enjoyed myself and felt like I had a proper workout. For someone who dislikes the gym, I was delighted to find a new way to exercise. Walking football is certainly good for the mind, body and soul. I left feeling like I had found my new happy place. At the end of last season, Arsenal in the community organised for all the groups involved to play on the Emirates pitch. It was a very surreal moment, one that I have taken and put on my updated bucket list. It is certainly a day I will never forget. Everyone involved had a fabulous time playing on a warm and sunny day in North London. Just before Christmas, we had a walking football session where we got to meet some of the under-18 academy players. I loved the session, as did the other ladies. As an Arsenal supporter, it was brilliant to have them joining in, with Jack Wilshere participating as well. Kind of a pinch-me moment. I love that it's not immediately obvious that I have a slight impairment. Walking football has given me a level playing field that allows me to play a sport I truly love. Sport can have a genuine healing power. I wish it could be bottled. There is such a nice dynamic within the group. I can say, hand on heart, I've met some of the nicest people I know. Our shared love of football has brought us together, and I'm thankful for that. I've been doing a walking challenge over the last few months to raise money for the Bone Cancer Research Trust. All the support from the ladies has driven me on towards my target. When people back and champion us, it enables us to soar. I want to say a big thank you to Dave, Josh and Adam, who coach our walking football sessions, and Reese from the Health and Wellbeing Department. Without them, we wouldn't have the opportunity to play, and they always ensure the sessions are fun. I feel fitter and have managed to strengthen my leg, which is a massive bonus for me. It has helped with my general well-being. I genuinely feel happier when I'm playing football, and, as a big sports fan, being able to play football again means the world to me. The biggest surprise to me is what a wide reach Arsenal in the community has. The schemes they are running are going from strength to strength. I can definitely see the benefits it has for people. I love the inclusivity and that they are bringing the beautiful game to all groups. I was so impressed with the amputee group. I've been an Arsenal fan from a young age, so being associated with the club and being able to play walking football here is a dream come true. I've had the privilege of attending some men's and women's matches at the Emirates Stadium this season. I've witnessed some brilliant football and screamed my heart out. I apologise to the people sitting near me. My friend who lives near the ground teases me that he can hear me cheering from his flat. Arsenal is my club, and I'm so proud of what they're trying to achieve on and off the pitch. You can see the fans' connection to the teams shining through, and it's reflected in attendances. A prime example of this is the last two women's WSL matches being sold out here. If you're interested, I'd say come on down and give it a go. You just might love it. I believe it will have a positive impact. The first step is to get out there and get moving, one foot in front of the other. And just remember, no running. Don't just take our word for it or Waruni's. Scan the QR code at this point in the program to watch a video about our sessions.
My fave shirt. Supporters tell us about an Arsenal shirt they hold in particular affection. Philip Tolf is 35 and is a Swedish supporter from Gothenburg. His favourite shirt is a throwback to when he first started supporting the club as a child. I've been an Arsenal fan since 1998 and I have many favourite shirts, but one I particularly like and think is underrated is the away shirt from 1999 to 2001. I think a lot about Arsenal shirts and football shirts in general, and I love the nostalgia. This is one of the first Arsenal shirts I saw as a fan, and for me, this one sets the tone for what an Arsenal away shirt should look like. I really like the simple design and navy panels under the arms. I have Bergkamp on the back of my shirt, and he is also my favourite player of all time. But I also associate the shirt with Thierry Henry and his first goal for Arsenal. The goal didn't come until his eighth appearance against Southampton on September 18, 1999, which is strange because both Ian Wright's first league goal and Dennis Bergkamp's first Arsenal goal came against Southampton too. This shirt really makes me think of the matches that I got the chance to watch as a kid. Because then I couldn't watch a lot of the matches, but when I finally got the chance to see Arsenal, it was magical. Being a real Arsenal nerd and really interested in history in general, this era and historic period means a lot to me, because it was when I started supporting the club. Another reason it makes me nostalgic is because my cousin Linus, who is 3 years older than me and also an Arsenal supporter, had this shirt with Vieira 4 on the back when we were growing up. I finally got hold of the shirt 2 years ago on www.classicfootballshirt.co.uk, and it's definitely one that I prefer to look at.
In fact, I've only worn it once, and then I saw that the print was a little loose at one spot, so I've never dared to wear it again. Did you know? It might have looked great, but the Gunners didn't enjoy huge success in this classic away shirt. We finished runners-up to Manchester United in both of the seasons in which it featured, and wore this shirt in the 1999 FA Cup final against the same opponents. The first match ended goalless, and United won the replay 2-1, with us wearing the home shirt, when Ryan Giggs scored his famous solo goal in extra time. Thierry Henry did score a lot of goals in this shirt, though. He was our top scorer in 1999-2000, with 26 goals in all competitions, and he netted another 22 the following season. If you share an interest in collecting Arsenal kit, there is an Arsenal shirt collectors group of over 3,500 members worldwide who buy, sell and swap Arsenal kit from all seasons. All are welcome. You can find them on Twitter at @shirt_Arsenal or Facebook, www.facebook.com/groups/98620242461.
Young Gun, Taylor Foran. Text, Brian Matovu. Photography, David Price and Stuart McFarlane. The Basics, born Hillingdon, 14th of October 2003. Joined, 14th of May 2012. Height, 6 foot 4 inches. Weight, 85 kilograms. Position, centre back. School, Viner School, Ickenham. Number, 50. Rate yourself. Pace, 80. Dribbling, 64. Passing, 83. Shooting, 45. Defending, 90. Physical, 92. I grew up in West London and my immediate family has actually never been too keen on football. My heritage mainly stems from England, but my granddad is Indian. It was the same granddad who was the football fan in the family. My immediate family's background was more martial arts. For example, my dad, Chris Foran, is a 7th degree black belt in kickboxing, 6th degree black belt in taekwondo, 2nd degree black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, a 1st degree black belt in hapkido, and a black belt in warrior's escrima. He's also been a world, European and 3-time British champion, a sport he's been doing for a long time. My sister, Holly Foran, is a junior Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion and junior Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu European champion. She's also a 1st degree black belt in kickboxing too. So not surprisingly, from an early age I was doing martial arts, but then I started playing football because a lot of my friends at school were playing it, and I started to enjoy it. But when I first began playing, I actually wasn't very good. In my first football session, I played in jeans, which was a memory in itself. But as I said before, I enjoyed it, and I developed really quickly to the point where I went from Sunday League to playing at different development centres like West Ham, Chelsea, Tottenham and Arsenal. The move to Arsenal came about when they asked me to come and play a game for them against Everton at Hale End. I was only around 7 at the time too, and played really well, and then after that game, I got offered the chance to sign for the club. I remember after hearing the good news walking to the car and my dad, who knew I loved match attack, said, "You can have as many match attack as you like." The highlights from Hale End days would be the tours. One that comes to mind is when we went to Singapore and we won with me as captain. It's such a beautiful country and has amazing hot weather. I've been at Arsenal for a really long time. I think the only player that's still here from when I joined is Kean Edwards. When I came to my scholarship decision, I was quietly confident, given I'd been at the club for a very long time. I was playing well and captained the side, so I always believed I would be able to make the step up for the under-18s. When I first arrived at Sopa Reality Training Centre, it feels like your first day at secondary school, but it's even scarier than that, and you're going into an environment where you need to step up quickly and you see your role models every day. When you train with the first team, it's a massive step up. The tempo is crazy. You find that out very quickly. But but given that we train with them more regularly in the under-21s, you get used to it more and more. Like anything, the more you do it, the more comfortable you become. We've adapted and developed so much by training with them. The first team staff and players are great. They try and get to know us and give us pointers on how to develop our games. I'd say I particularly built a good relationship with Aaron Ramsdale, Jorginho and Cedric. They're really good with me, top players and nice to be around. Going to Dubai with the first team in 2022 was surreal. You get to experience what they do on a day-to-day basis, the level of training. The amount of tactical information you have to take on board from the boss is on another level, and we also did team visits to places which are very cool to experience. I also had to do an initiation, and I sang Stand By Me by Ben E. King, which I was ready for. I wasn't nervous. I used it as a way to get a little sing-song going. My loan move to Hartlepool came on deadline day last year, the day before I was meant to go to Newport, but the deal fell through. Then Keith Curl, the manager at the time, called me and said he'd monitored me for some time and expressed a lot of interest in me. It happened really quickly, and I shot up there that night. When I got there, the Hartlepool fans were amazing. They are so special, and to play in front of them each week was a pleasure. Up north particularly, the passion for football is different. The difference between senior football and academy football is that there's a lot more hunger and desire to win because it's so important. People are playing for their lives, playing for their kids, their mortgages, which brings about that extra level of needing to win. We were in a relegation battle and unfortunately went down, and the impact it can have on players is massive. So you feel that each week some people will have to take pay cuts and lose jobs. In senior football, you have to get results. The toughest grounds in terms of atmosphere, I'd say, was Valley Parade, home of Bradford City. And it was an incredible experience playing there, because they've got about a 25,000-seater stadium and they had over 18,000 fans there. So it was great to play in an atmosphere like that. They were one of the very few who had a decent pitch, because some of the surfaces weren't great, so we had to adapt quickly. It's also more physical, which stems from the hunger to win. I remember when we played Salford City, I was up against Matt Smith, who's 6'6", so that was a challenge in itself. The experience was really positive, and I took a lot of learning from it. My plan for the rest of the season is to play as many games for the under-21s as possible, but I want to be able to potentially go on loan and play senior football again. I really enjoyed it, and I'm at the age where I want to push myself out of my comfort zone and make a name for myself in the game. I also feel like I can thrive in a first-team environment. The past. Favourite Arsenal player of all time, Tony Adams. Earliest Arsenal memory, playing against Everton in the Dome at Hale End. Favourite goal I've ever scored, in the semi-final in France to get us to the final. A football memory that makes me smile, lifting the trophy as captain in Singapore. Moment I realised I could make it, when I got my first contract at Arsenal. Piece of advice I would give to my younger self. Don't listen to outside opinions, focus on the positives. My best subject in school, maths. First player who made me fall in love with football, Sergio Ramos. My position growing up, centre back stroke centre midfield. Coach who has impacted my game most, Greg Lincoln. Most clutch moment so far, scoring a last minute winner in the under-18s. The present, favourite rising baller, Ethan Nwaneri. My best attribute on the field, heading and leadership. Favourite food, steak and chips. Favourite drink, orange Fanta. Favourite current Arsenal player, Rice Baby. Favourite movie, Harry Potter. Hardest working teammate, Alexei Fedoroshenko. Most skillful teammate, Amario Kozier-Dubry. Score or assist, score. Sliders or Crocs, sliders. Favourite training drill, defensive drills. Favourite music artist, country music. A country I'd love to visit, Japan. The future. A player who could go all the way, Amario. if I could play with anyone, Sergio Ramos or Virgil van Dijk. I will be happy with my career if I make my Premier League debut. I want to make a difference, helping win games. One thing I want to add to my game, more goals from set pieces. If I could get a degree in anything, sports science, I would make a better player if I continue to work on my super strengths. One person I want to meet, Gordon Ramsay. One trophy I would love to win, World Cup. Dream first team squad number, 4 or 5. If I wasn't playing football, I would be an MMA fighter. Champions League or World Cup? World Cup.
Around the academy. Under-21s beat Chelsea. Mehmet Ali described our 4-2 win away to Chelsea Under-21s on Friday, March 1st in the Premier League 2 as a really good advert for Under-21s football. Brazilian David Washington opened the scoring for the Blues at King's Meadow, but goals from Taylor Foran, James Sweet, Ethan Nwaneri and a Zach Sturge own goal saw us complete the turnaround before a late consolation from Jimmy Morgan. The Gunners could even afford the luxury of missing a penalty early in the match after Josh Nichols had been brought down. Nwaneri saw his spot kick well saved by Teddy Sharman-Lowe. Nwaneri wasn't to be denied though, and his goal was the pick of our bunch, dribbling through a thicket of Chelsea defenders to make it 3-1. It was a really good advert for under-21s football from two good footballing sides, both teams going toe-to-toe. It was really entertaining, said Ali after the final whistle. From my perspective, or our perspective as a group of staff, we wanted to have a bit more control in the game because it could have been 5-5 at half-time. We had Carl Hein in goal and he made some excellent saves for us. And also some of our play in some of the areas we got into was excellent this evening. I felt we always looked a threat on transition because of how well we pressed high up the pitch and we had moments of some really good play out from the back into good areas. So a really entertaining game. And in the second half we had a little bit more about us, kept going for them, got into good areas and got our reward. Alexi speaks at WWF's Football for Future. Alexi Rojas Fedoroshenko was a guest speaker on WWF's webinar called Changing the Game, the role of the sports industry in bringing our world back to life, on Tuesday, March 5th. Alexi, alongside Tottenham defender Amy Turner, Sky presenter David Garrido, and Elliot Worsop from Football for Future, spoke about the actions they're undertaking to be more sustainable and also answered questions from the audience. Earlier in January, Alexi addressed Reclaim, a special weekend hosted at the Eden Project focused on mental health and planetary well-being. Academy Girls at Community Event. Three Arsenal women under-21 players, Ruby Seabee, Maya Hinson and Izzy Fisher, attended Arsenal in the community's Premier League Primary Stars tournament at Market Road football pitches. The event, attended by over 130 girls, featured the players engaging with the teams, refereeing games, and presenting trophies to the winners at the conclusion of the tournament. Thinking of you, Chris. Supporters may recently have read the very worrying news about our former academy player, Christopher Olsen. Now playing with Midtjylland in Denmark, the Sweden international was hospitalised recently with what was described as an extremely rare inflammatory condition of his brain vessels by his club, who added that his condition was considered stable and the doctors continue to see some progress. At the same time, they feel that Christopher's level of consciousness is increasing. Chris joined us from his native IFK Norrköping in Sweden as a first-year scholar in the summer of 2011. Following a trial period where he impressed academy manager Liam Brady. He made excellent progress through the ranks and travelled with the first team on the pre-season Asia tour in 2013, scoring a memorable goal against an Indonesia representative team. Soon after, he made his first team debut on September 25, 2013, in a League Cup fixture against West Bromwich Albion, scoring in a successful penalty shootout for the Gunners. In all, Chris played in 75 games across the under-18s, 19s and 21s, scoring 7 goals, as well as numerous friendly fixtures. In 2014-15, Chris headed to Midtjylland, though subsequently went home to Sweden and AIK Solna, on to FC Krasnodar in Russia, followed by a stint at Vincent Kompany's Anderlecht, before returning to Midtjylland in the summer of 2022. He's earned 47 caps for his country and played at numerous representative levels, including during his time with Arsenal. Everyone at the club wishes Chris all the very best as the 28-year-old battles back from what is obviously a very serious condition. We hope he can continue to make progress in his recovery.
Tonight's visitors, FC Porto. Formed 1893. Stadium, Estadio do Dragão. Since 2003, capacity 50,033. President, Jorge Nuno Pinto da Costa. Honours, Portuguese League title 30 times, Portuguese Cup 19 times, European Cup Champions League winners 1987-2004, UEFA Cup Europa League winners 2003-2011, UEFA Super Cup winners 1987. Most appearances, João Pinto, 587, from 1981 to 1997. Most goals, Fernando Gomes, 355, from 1974 to 89. Other sports affiliated to FC Porto, basketball, billiards, boccia, boxing, cycling, futsal, goalball, handball, roller hockey, swimming, and table tennis. Head coach, Sergio Conceição. A former Portugal right winger who scored 12 goals in 56 internationals, including a hat-trick against Germany at Euro 2000, Sergio Conceição has transformed his talent as a player into the managerial sphere and is now the longest-serving Porto head coach of all time, this being his 367th game in charge following his appointment as successor to Nuno Espírito Santo in 2017. A trophy winner as a player with Porto and Lazio, the 49-year-old has won 10 trophies as Porto boss, including league titles in 2017-18, 19-20 and 21-22. Armed with a 1-0 first-leg lead, FC Porto have their eyes trained on a place in the UEFA Champions League quarter-finals. Their record in England, however, suggests they still have their work cut out to make it through. Remarkably, the Portuguese side have never won a UEFA match in this country. Indeed, they have lost 18 of their 21 games here, including 8 of the last 9, during which they have scored just one goal. Within that recent sequence was a 5-0 defeat at Emirates in the second leg of the 2009-10 Champions League round of 16, which followed a 2-1 first leg Porto win. That was the last time Arsenal reached the quarter-finals. Porto have made the last 8 3 times since then, losing all 3 ties, the last 2 to Premier League opposition, Liverpool in 2018-19 and Chelsea in 2020-21. Their most recent round of 16 tie against an English club in 2017-18 also brought defeat by Liverpool, 5-0 at home, 0-0 away. Current Porto head coach Sergio Conceição was in charge for all of those losses, so he will be extra motivated to turn the tide tonight. His team reached this round as runners-up to Barcelona in Group H. 2 defeats by the Catalans, 1-0 at home and 2-1 away, counterbalanced by wins in both games against Shakhtar Donetsk, 3-1 away, 5-3 home, and Antwerp, 4-1 away, 2-0 home. Domestically, this has been a relatively disappointing campaign for the 30-time Portuguese champions, with the 2 Lisbon clubs heading them in their Primeira Liga title race, although they did give themselves hope recently with a stunning 5-0 home win against Benfica. Ousted from the League Cup at the group stage, they are through to the semi-finals of the Portuguese Cup, where they will face Vitória Guimarães in defence of the trophy they have won 19 times. Twice champions of Europe in 1987 and under Jose Mourinho in 2004, Porto were UEFA Cup winners in 2003, also under Mourinho, and Europa League victors in 2011. This is the Dragons' 27th Champions League campaign, one behind the competition record jointly held by Real Madrid and Barcelona,
so they are more than seasoned campaigners among Europe's elite. But it is 20 years since they won a knockout tie in England, Mourinho again, famously, against Manchester United, and Porto will feel it is high time that their fortunes on these shores begin to change. Scouting report. Tactics. Head coach Sergio Conceição inspired a defensive tactical masterclass at the Estádio Dragão by sacrificing FC Porto's high-intensity pressing game for a well-organised, pragmatic approach. His 4-2-3-1 became a 4-5-1 out of possession, with their nominal number 10 Pepe dropping back into the right of midfield to ensure the Portuguese side packed central areas. Wide men Galeno and Francisco Conceição were also extremely diligent in the way they retreated behind the ball. FC Porto will likely repeat this ploy tonight, adopting a mid-block to crowd space and disrupt our passing rhythm. They are supremely disciplined in carrying out the manager's instructions. When they retrieve the ball, the two-time European champions want to spring quick breakaways. Style of play. In essence, Conceição's side is set up to counter-attack. On home turf, FC Porto enjoyed just a 35.2% share of the ball, so here in North London, we can expect them to sit back in their shape once again. From that solid five-man midfield base, they will try to force turnovers that catch us cold. It was clear in the first leg that the Portuguese will also look to slow down the pace of the game. They will almost certainly try to make it a fragmented affair that is bitty in style rather than free-flowing. Strengths. This FC Porto side is not as gifted as some of their vintage teams from previous generations, but they make up for that with terrific nous and game management. Disciplined in everything they do, they are not an easy team to break down under the astute Conceição. Conceding just 17 goals in 25 domestic league matches, they are a very smart defensive outfit who rarely offer up gifts. They also have good pace and energy throughout, especially down the wings where the fullbacks and wide midfielders display plenty of industry and speed. Most of FC Porto's most dangerous attacking forays come from the flanks, and this is something Mikel Arteta and his players will be well aware of ahead of this evening's clash. Weaknesses. The visitors did not show any obvious fragilities in their first leg, but they do lack a touch of creativity inside the final third. In Portugal's Primeira Liga, they have an XG of 28.01 in open play, which is way below Sporting, 36.8, Braga, 39.24, and Benfica, 45.8, who have all scored more open play goals than FC Porto in domestic football too, as have Minos, Estoril and Arouca. Veteran centre-back Pepe is also a possible weak link. He played well last time out, defending with great heart and intelligence, but at 41, he no longer has the pace he once had. Key man. FC Porto's star man is undoubtedly left winger Galeno, who scored a magnificent long-range injury-time strike at the Estádio Dragão to hand his side the advantage. His pace and footwork were impressive all evening, and in key moments throughout this UEFA Champions League campaign, the wide man has stayed calm to deliver vital goals and assists. Galeno is the joint leading goalscorer in the competition, if you exclude penalty kicks, with 5 strikes to his name. Cutting in from the left onto his fine right foot, the 26-year-old has exuded real quality. Without the ball, he will work hard to close down space for Bukayo Saka on that side of the field. And from turnovers or counter-attacks, the Portuguese star is going to be a serious threat. Galeno is a talent that will need close attention.
Match action. UEFA Champions League. Wednesday, February the 21st, 2024, 8 p.m. Estádio do Dragão. Porto 1. Galeno 90+4. Arsenal 0. Key moments. 21. Galeno smacks the post with a fierce shot and then fires the rebound wide. 35. Saliba heads wide from a corner. 45. Havertz heads wide from a corner. 63. Varela just beats Martinelli to the ball in the box. 90. Gabriel heads over from a free kick. 90. Galeno cuts inside from the left and bends a fierce shot past Rea at the death. Match facts. This is just the second time on record that Arsenal have failed to record a shot on target in a Champions League game, previously doing so away to Barcelona in the last 16 in March 2011. Arsenal have failed to score in a Champions League game for the first time since a 2-0 defeat to Barcelona in February 2016, ending a run of 15 consecutive games with a goal. Porto ended a run of 5 straight home games in the Champions League without a win against English opposition since beating Leicester 5-0 in December 2016. Quotes. Declan Rice. When it's 0-0, you look at the clock and it's 93 minutes gone. If you can't win the game, don't lose it. Maybe we needed that savviness about us to stay in and get a draw in a tough stadium against a tough opponent. But there's a lot to play for in the second leg back at home. Match stats. Expected goals. FCP 1.21. AFC 0.44. Shots. FCP 8. AFC 7. Shots on target. FCP 2, Arsenal 0. Hit woodwork. FCP 1, AFC 0. Possession. FCP 35%, AFC 65%. Completed passes. FCP 274, AFC 495. Corners. FCP 1, AFC 10. Tackles 1. FCP 17. AFC 13. Offsides. FCP 0. AFC 0. Yellow cards. FCP 2. AFC 3. Red cards. FCP 0. AFC 0.
Match action. Premier League, Saturday, March 9th, 2024, 5:30 p.m. Emirates Stadium. Arsenal 2, Rice 19, assist White. Havertz 86, assist White. Brentford 1, Wissa 45 plus 4. Match stats. Expected goals. AFC 1.28, BFC 0.97. Shots, AFC 17, BFC 9. Shots on target, AFC 6, BFC 4. Hit woodwork, AFC 1, BFC 0. Possession, AFC 72%, BFC 28%. Completed passes, AFC 465, BFC 123. Corners, AFC 10. BFC 4. Tackles 1. AFC 4. BFC 6. Offsides. AFC 1. BFC 2. Yellow cards. AFC 2. BFC 4. Red cards. AFC 0. BFC 0. Key moments. 19th minute. Rice heads home. White's in-swinging corner. 45th minute. Wissa closes down Ramsdale to equalise. 55th minute. Tony's long-range effort is well saved by Ramsdale. 59th minute. Gabriel has a header cleared off the line. 74th minute. Rice smashes against the bar from outside the area. 86th minute. Havertz heads in White's cross from in front of goal. Match facts. Kai Havertz scored in his fourth consecutive Premier League appearance for the first time in his career. This made it 8 successive Premier League wins. The last time we managed that was April 2015. We have now scored 70 league goals this season, the earliest we have reached this mark since 1964. Quotes, Kai Havertz, I always want to become better and better, and I know football always goes up and down, and one week you're the hero and the next week not. So just try to work hard and, you know, keep the momentum going and help the team.
Teams. For Arsenal: manager, Mikel Arteta. Shirt, red with white sleeves. Shorts, white. Socks, white. 1. Aaron Ramsdale, goalkeeper. 2. William Saliba. 4. Ben White. 5. Thomas Partey. 6. Gabriel Magalhães. 7. Bukayo Saka. 8. Martin Odegaard. 9. Gabriel Jesus. 10. Emile Smith Rowe. 11. Gabriel Martinelli. 12. Jurrien Timber. 14. Eddie Nketiah. 15. Jakub Kiwior. 17. Cedric Soares. 18. Takahiro Tomiyasu. 19. Leandro Trossard. 20. Jorginho. 21. Fabio Vieira. 22. David Raya, goalkeeper. 24. Reece Nelson. 25. Mohamed Elneny. 29. Kai Havertz. 31. Karl Heine, goalkeeper. 35. Alexander Zinchenko. 41. Declan Rice. 63. Ethan Nwaneri. For FC Porto: head coach, Sergio Conceição. Shirt: blue and white striped shirts. Shorts: blue shorts. Socks: blue socks. 2. Fabio Cardoso. 3. Pepe. 5. Ivan Meccano. 6. Stephen Eustaquio. 8. Marco Grujic. 9. Mehdi Taremi. 10. Francisco Conceição. 11. Pepe. 12. Zaidou. 13. Galeno. 14. Claudio Ramos, goalkeeper. 15. Jorge Sanchez. 16. Nico Gonzalez. 17. Ivan Jaime. 18. Wendell. 19. Dani Namaso. 20. Andre Franco. 22. Alan Varela. 33. Joao Mario. 28. Romario Barrow. 29. Tony Martinez. 30. Evanilson. 31. Otavio. 52. Martin Fernandez. 67. Vasco Sousa. 70. Goncalo Borges. 87. Bernardo Folla. 91. Goncalo Ribeiro, goalkeeper. 97. Zepedro. 99. Diogo Costa, goalkeeper. Tonight's officials are all from France. Referee: Clement Turpin. Assistant referees: Nicolas Danos, Erwan Fangine. Fourth official: Ruddy Bouquet. VAR official: Jerome Brissard. Additional VAR official: Willy Delajotte. Tonight's other UEFA Champions League fixture: Barcelona versus Napoli, 8 p.m. No room for racism. The Arsenal Foundation, helping young people fulfil their potential through education and sport.
Get the beers in. Camden Town Brewery, official beer partner of Arsenal FC.
No room for racism anywhere. Arsenal and the rest of the Premier League will not tolerate racism anywhere, and we are taking action to combat all forms of discrimination. But we can all do more. Challenge it, report it, change it, and together we can make a positive impact. Visit PremierLeague.com/no room for racism to find out more. Hashtag no room for racism. Challenge it, report it, change it. Premier League, Arsenal.
Why ask the barrister if you can be the barrister? Lavazza coffee machine from £1. Discover more at lavazza.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.